Hey folks at home, welcome to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. Today we have a very fun guest on the show. Thomas Scioli is on the show. Thomas has worked on so many great things. He's worked on Godlands, he worked on Transformers v. G.I. Joe, you know, he's worked on Fantastic Four, a bunch of indie stuff. He's done a lot of fun work, to say the least here. And we talk all about it, much, much more about his work as being an artist, a co-writer, a writer, all this jazz, and hopefully you guys take some like inspiration and motivation from it. And we talk a little bit about G.I. Joe, and the challenge still stands is we will give a personal shout out and share it like crazy to the artist who can make us as our favorite G.I. Joe characters. That being me as myself as Shipwreck, and also as well as him as either Dr. Venom or Flag. So, General Flag. So, take a guess, folks. You guys can do it at home. The challenge still stands to those fellow artists out there. So, thank you for tuning in this episode. Make sure you guys subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comiccronicle.podbean.com for more episodes out weekly every Monday. Thanks for tuning in this episode. Hopefully, you guys enjoy me and Thomas' talk. And my talk with Thomas. We're recording. Thomas, welcome to the show, good man.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And I gotta say, first, right off the bat, is you do some truly, 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 truly iconic work, to say the least, here in comics. You must be extremely busy all the time, because you seem to be working a lot, and you do a lot of your own stuff right now. Like, it seems you don't have time, but I definitely got to say thank you for having time to come on the show.
Yeah, no problem, yeah.
I got to ask, man, is we do like to have people's origin stories on the show. Like, I like to ask, like, where did people come from sort of thing? Because I was kind of recommended you on Twitter sort of thing. Like, everyone's like, hey, you should follow Thomas over here. So, like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, so like, you're a genuine gentleman, to say the least, here. And I don't want to be like, oh, yeah, gentleman. People are like, oh, no, wait, he was an asshole. Like, I got to say, how do you have time for stuff usually these days? Like, how are you making it work?
I mean, I don't have a lot of time, you know, like you said, and so I just go without sleep, you know. I just, you know, just grab sleep where I can. I usually, like, work pretty late into the night, work till, you know, 3 in the morning at least, you know, sometimes later, and, you know, hopefully it won't always be like, you know, like, I'm kind of trying to take advantage of, you know, like, in comics, you just never know. It's like feast or famine, so it's like, if work's coming my way, I gotta take it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's it. You gotta, like, brace yourself as a guy, because I do comics work, and also I work in film, so that's both those of, if something comes, you better grasp it. You just better be like, okay, you gotta put it all your time.
Yeah, totally.
It's nuts, man. It's nuts. And you, so folks at home, you're an artist, and do you do any writing at all? Do you touch upon that, or is it just artwork that you sort of do?
Yeah, no, I write and draw. Like, I mean, you know, everything I've done for the past, I don't know, like 5 years at least. I mean, I guess, yeah, no. Yeah, probably like 90-some% of what I do, I either write or co-write. Like, I co-wrote Godland with Joe Casey, mm-hmm. and then I co-wrote Transformers versus G.I. Joe with John Barber. And then, minus, like, you know, 2 or 3, you know, short things that I've done, like, working, you know, with, like, another writer's scripts, mm-hmm. everything else I've done, I just write myself. You know, Fantastic Four Grand Design, wrote, drew, colored, lettered myself. Same with GoBots, before that. Same with Superpowers before that.
Jesus. You are a man of many talents, to say the least there, and it seems that you seem to love it, and I really, truly dig that. I love how you can do both, because it's almost, you're kind of a rare breed for people who do both, and do both well, to say the least, because I think most people just want to stick to one, and they're like, that's it, which I don't mind, and it's not too bad to do, but balancing both has got to be, like, an extremely thing that I give people like you so much kudos for, because it's like trying to be, okay, I'm going to write the movie, but then I'm going to star in the movie, and I'm also going to direct the movie. It's like, very few people do that shit. Like, very few people do both in comics, I think.
Yeah, I mean, at least now, you know, there's, the, you know, like, comic strips and stuff.
Oh, well, yeah.
In a lot of cases, that's, yeah, that's, like, one guy, and then, but yeah, comics, Yeah, and maybe like pre-60s Marvel, like it was kind of like 60s Marvel set up that model of like, you know, okay, there's a writer, and then there's an artist, and then there's a, you know, letterer, and then there's a color. I feel like there was a lot more, you know, of like the you know,
separate jobs sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there was. And I think that the times have changed so much now that you could definitely publish something. Like, I've had creators on the show before who have just published their own work. Like, they just, they do everything themselves, and they make it work. And it truly blows me away, sort of thing. But I definitely, I want to get into, like, your history a little bit, man, because it's always something we like to do on the show. So, what's your origin story, sort of thing? Like, what is that thing that got you to be an artist in comics, to say the least?
Yeah, it's tough to say. Like, I've just been, you know, like, into drawing, you know, for as long as I can remember. Like it really did start with drawing. Like, just, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I was, you know, I'd be drawing stuff, you know, with my brother and sisters and, you know, like, sort of the whole family. Like, we were all into drawing, and my mom was, like, you know, she studied art in college and stuff. You know, she would, like, do paintings and stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those sort of, you know, classic stories where, you know, it's kind of like once she became a mom, she kind of put that stuff aside. And, yeah. And you know, like, I mean, I haven't seen her, you know, draw anything since I was, you know, maybe, like, before the age of 5 or 6.
Oh, shit.
It was, like, the last time I saw, yeah, my mom draw something. And like, she would draw, like, you know, portraits of my dad or something, you know. Mm. And to me, it was, like, the most realistic, like, amazing thing I've ever seen. But, like, that doesn't exist. I haven't found any of her drawings. So I don't know if that was just, you know, like, a 3-year-old seeing, like, his mom's drawing and thinking it was this amazing masterpiece.
It was Picasso.
Or if they genuinely were, yeah.
Damn. Well, so that's cool though. That's awesome that you came from an artistic family. So they had to be supportive, or were they like, "No, you're supposed to be a scientist, Thomas, you fool."
No, they were like, I think like my parents were kind of like, probably like they were into like anything that I would have gotten involved in that was like kind of like prestigious or special, you know. So like art, you know, like that's like they were, you know, like fully behind it.
Mm-hmm. And then writing, they had to be it too. Like, it's amazing to me that, like, I didn't grow up with that sort of thing at all, to say the least. Here again, I'm kind of the first, I think, kind of artistic guy to work in any art field and comics and film and such like that. So,
yeah.
I'm like the ugly stepchild at the parties of, like, what's that one do? What's my cousin do? Like, oh, we don't talk to him, sort of thing. Like, all right, fair enough. But
there was like a little bit of that. With like when I chose comics as my discipline to focus on, just from my dad, because like again, my parents like they love art, and the house is like filled with art. You know, ever since I was a kid, you know, they'd you know buy art, you know, from you know students or whatever, you know, they Bend whatever they, but they yeah they you know, like we just had all this art around, and like my dad really like. Loved painting and understood painting and appreciated painting. So when I was a painter, when I was focusing on sort of like fine art painting, like he loved that. But then it was comics. It was kind of like when I switched to comics, he's kind of like comic books. You know, that isn't that a little bit silly? You know, like there was a little bit of that. Like, you know, it took him a while to, you know, and you know, people would sort of explain to my dad, no, you don't understand. Like comics, they're really, you know, they're really hot. You know, they're
it's
really
still
you know,
art,
really,
Dad. I swear.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So there was a little bit of that.
That's a whole sitcom right there. That's like a funny bit you could do of like the artistic dad, but somewhat disappointed in his son. Why? What did he do? Like, was he like a jock? No, he worked in comics. What?
Yeah, it feels like there's this like generational divide. Like if you're over a certain age, you have this maybe like distrust or discomfort of comics where it's like, oh, that's kids stuff.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but like anybody who's like our age or younger, it's like, you know, or maybe even like a little bit older than us, it's like, you know, comics are where it's at, you know. Like,
oh, it's true. Oh, it's. I love doing that thing where you give somebody a comic that's older, like one of those older folks who do really have that feeling of, oh, comics are silly books and whatnot. And my grandmother was always on the fence about it. She loved the movies. We watched TV shows. I mean, fuck, we watched all the episodes of Gotham together. And there's one comic I gave her that put her in, and there's a picture of her reading it that I took, and no one believed me. And she really twisted her around on that. Shout out to you, Rita Morgan. Was the 9/11 tribute that of the Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, that they did.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was the one. She was like,
yeah.
Oh, shit, they've done this. I'm like, yeah. That's just them tackling real event. What do you think happens in their own world? It's like, oh, shit. Like, it was that whole mind-blowing thing. Like, yeah, they can be more than just a funny book. So, like, gee, we're like a Superman. It's more than that.
And yeah. Like, for my dad, it was like, there was like a comic. It was like a graphic novel or whatever. It was like R. Crumb drawing Franz Kafka stories. Oh. And so that, you know, like, that had enough sort of, like, snob appeal where my dad was like, oh, yeah, this is cool. You know, I like this. This is, you know.
Oh, this is art, son. Yes, yeah, it is. That sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
How did you, like, so comics, did you find them as a kid, like, growing up sort of thing? Was it one of those you find them at, like, a discount store? What, I mean, well, how old are you, though? I got to ask.
Yeah, I'm 43.
Okay. I'm a little bit younger than you, believe it or not, despite what the voice sounds like.
Right, yeah. I mean, I just assume, like, everybody's my age, but yeah, you never know.
Mentally, I'm your age. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. We're all in the same state of arrested development. yes, but, yeah, amazing. I mean, so if you're like, around my age, then, there was a time when comics were just, they were kind of, like, everywhere, you know? Like, you'd go to 7-Eleven or whatever, you know, it's just, you could, like, find comics, like, anywhere. And then comics kind of, like, exploded in the 90s, where, like, you really started finding them everywhere. And then, like, late 90s, they, like, disappeared for, like, a couple years. You know, like, Marvel went bankrupt, and the industry went into a collapse. And you could find, like, the wreckage of comics. You know, you'd find these, like, big bags, like, of discount comics all, you know, bunched together and stuff. Mm. And then maybe somewhere around, you know, early 2000s, 2005 or whatever, the, like, graphic novel boom starts, you know, pumping up, and like, the manga thing had kind of been infiltrating, you know, and so then, you know, comics are ubiquitous again, you know? So it was that era of, you know, comics early ubiquity, where it was, like, you could go into any, and it would be, you know, there'd be, like, the rack with magazines, and it would be, like, you know, Star Wars comics. You know, when, like, the Star Wars movies were still coming out, like, the very first ones were still coming out.
Yeah, yeah, they had that, I think, what was it, Dark Horse or something like that at the time? No, Marvel was doing it at first.
Yeah, before that, it was like, the Marvel era. Yeah,
the original Marvel era, yeah.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and, the Dark Horse was interesting because, like, just like how comics sort of went away for a little bit, Star Wars went away for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it was, like, the Marvel comic ended, and there just wasn't, you know, there wasn't really any Star Wars anything, you know, for a while. And then, like, the Timothy Zahn novels started coming out, and Dark Horse started doing comics, you know, so they kind of picked up the ball, like, you know, while we were waiting for, you know, the next batch of movies.
Yeah. Oh, it's true. I've often compared the Star Wars fandom to another one of mine that is huge with me, because we experienced the same thing of a drought, and we experienced it recently in the past decade, too. Of being a Godzilla fan, you definitely have that drought. The same thing happened with us. Like, there was all these things, and I was a little kid growing up with it. We had all this stuff, and then in the early 2000s sort of thing, it died, and there was nothing. And there was a couple comics, and that was it. That's all you had. I read those as a kid, and they inspired me a lot, too. Those books helped. Godzilla's my first fandom.
Was Toho still coming? Like, I always assumed they were still coming out with movies.
No, it ended in 2004.
Toho stopped.
Yeah. 2004, they ended. And there was no Godzilla anything, but maybe IDW would put out a book. IDW and Image shared the same license for a while, I believe, if I remember correctly. It was both of those. Someone's going to correct me in the comments. But there were so many people coming out with, hell, even Marvel had Godzilla at a point. But there was a huge break from 2004 to 2016 before Toho, or 2014, when the Legendary Pictures one came out. And then that one did iffy, and then it died, and then it got re-picked up in 2016 again, and then now with the new movies we're living in now. So, 100% I relate to that with the Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh, it's terrible. But, so you saw one of those. What was your first comic, man? Like, what was that thing that you saw on that spinner rack then? I love diving into the origin story, because everyone always has a good origin story. Usually.
Yeah, like, I mean, because, yeah, for me, like, it's hard to remember, like, because it's so early, but it was, like, there was like the mini comics that came with He-Man figures.
Oh shit!
There were like or like I'd be at like a bookstore, and there'd be like the little paperback where it's like Howard the Duck. It's like like the Howard the Duck paperback.
Yeah.
You know, or you know, collecting a bunch of the comics or Star Wars. Like that's one of the earliest ones I remember was. It was called like Marvel Comics, Star Wars, it was called something that sounds like graphic novel, or Star Wars Illustrated Novel, collection of, it was like a collection of the comics in like a paperback form, and I've written about it online and stuff, and on the cover like Han Solo's shooting Chewbacca and stuff, and it was a collection, of. Like a bunch of the British, like Marvel UK, Star Wars stories, written. I think most of them were written by Archie Goodwin, and then there was like one at the end written by Chris Claremont. But just like really great stuff. It's one of those things. Like I recently reacquired because I had lost that decades ago, and then I'm like, let me track down that because I couldn't even remember like what that comic was called. And I was looking through, like, descriptions of, like, the old Marvel Star Wars, that doesn't sound like it, and then I found that one, and it's like, oh, yeah, this is it, really good stuff, had, like, a, sort of like a film noir story with Princess Leia, where, like, she has this, like, guy who's, like, her bodyguard, and he's, when she's, like, sort of, like, a young princess of Alderaan, she has this bodyguard, and he, like, teaches her how to defend herself, like, teaches her, how to use a laser gun and all this kind of stuff. And then, a couple years later, he's not working for her anymore, and now he's been, like, hired to, like, assassinate her. And it's got, like, this real poignant ending and stuff, really good stuff.
What age were you read that? Because that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was probably, first grade or something, like that.
Yeah, you still got that.
Maybe even pre-literate. Like, I might have gotten it and not known how to read, and just kind of like, here's Star Wars, and, like, looked at the pictures until I was old enough to read it.
And then that was the book. That's amazing, though. Like, I wish we'd get storylines like that. Don't get me wrong. I love the current-day Star Wars comics. I'm not putting out there that I hate them. I love them.
Oh, yeah, they're great, yeah.
But that is something that you'd probably never see right now, unless it's, like, a different side of story. I've had a few people on who've worked on the Star Wars comics, and they all said some of them do like their own. Every now and then they'll come out with like the mini, like the Vader's castle shit, where it's like a mini horror story sort of thing. Those are awesome too, but man, I'm with you. Like when you got that new, like how long ago did you get that book back?
Just like maybe a year or two ago, had this like rush of nostalgia and like and the art wasn't quite as good as I remembered it being, when you're a kid, it's just like the most beautiful thing ever. And then I see it, and it's like, I still like the art, but it's a little quirky. It's some of that Carmine Infantino Star Wars art. So it's like kind of, it's a little bit funky, but still fun, but the story, like, it worked. Like it was, as good as I remembered.
Oh god, yeah. That's the nice part is when you get that. Recently, in the past couple months, I've actually reacquired one of mine from childhood too. Actually, a couple of them. Yeah, I was going through dollar bins just for the hell of it at a bookstore, and I actually found it. And it was that moment I just screamed out, "Yeah!" And everyone thought I was gonna have a stroke. They're like, "What's going on?" And it's like, "What? This is a childhood book." I don't know why. It was it was at a store, and this is back when they started selling comics again in stores. It was a grocery store. And you might laugh at this. It was actually a War Machine book.
Okay.
And it was one of the people were like, what? And it's like, yeah, like my first books were Iron Man and War Machine.
Yeah.
Those are my two first comics of all time. And then there was a Transformers one right after that. So those are my first three. And I read them all at once sort of thing. And I got the first two Iron Man, I got the Transformers, but I never could find that War Machine because I read it in the store, and I remember getting yelled at by a clerk.
All right, yeah.
And it's one of those, like, once you get it, you're just... So folks at home listening, keep the nostalgia, find your old books, because what they've done for you, maybe if you get a mini you or something like that, or somebody you may know, you never know what that book can do for somebody else, like later on in life.
Yeah, I had a similar one where it was like, I read it on the shelf. It was a... but never owned it. It was like a Captain America with I forget who did the interior art. Maybe Bob Layton, or I don't know, like, I think it had like a Mike Zeck cover, but it was okay. You know, like, you know, it was this thing really like loomed large in my imagination. Like, I remember reading it, and it's like Captain America's shield, like somebody makes like a superior duplicate of it, like it's even better, and then they make like a robot, like a exoskeleton suit out of the material, and it's like you know, and then eventually, like, you know, Cap kind of gets his shield back, and then he destroys this thing with his shield, because, like, there's no way, you can try as hard as you want and use whatever science you got, you can't make something more powerful than Cap's shield, you know?
Yeah, that's so awesome.
I finally got that one, yeah.
Well, you finally got it, and so was that moment, did you find it online or in a store, sort of thing?
Yeah, I found it online. It would have been nice, but it took me a while to track it down, because I was kind of, like, asking people on Twitter and stuff, like, I described the story, and people had a couple possibilities that weren't it, you know, but it's because, like, some of them were like from the Steve Englehart run, because that Steve Englehart run of Captain America, they've been like retelling those stories over and over again since. So there was like a similar story with like a fake Captain America who had a fake shield, you know, the duplicate shield that Cap has to fight. But then, like, yeah, somebody, you know, chimed in with the one, and I was like, yeah, that's, as soon as I saw the cover, I was like, yeah, that's it.
That's awesome. See, Twitter's a good place, people at home. you can right. have Twitter for good reasons. It's also somewhat
bad. Yeah, good things happen there, yeah.
Yeah, don't comment on Game of Thrones, because trust me, that's just basically signing a death warrant at this point. I've said it numerous times in the show, those stories. So, Thomas, man, what was the first gig that you ever got? Like, what was your first comic gig? Like, what was it? Was it your own, like, little mini thing you've done, and someone hired you to do a mini story? Was it...
Yeah, I mean, I started off, like, doing my own stuff, like, doing, you know, like, self-published comics and stuff, and then I got, like, the Zurich grant, which was this grant that Peter Laird, who was the co-creator of the Ninja Turtles, he created this grant to help, you know, aspiring comics creators to, like, you know, sort of self-publish their own comics.
I've never heard of that. That's amazing.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore, but it was around for maybe 10 years or so.
Oh,
and yeah, so that was real helpful. I had that, and then took that, you know, and sent copies of that. It was Myth of Eight Opus. It was, you know, like the first, you know, like real comic I ever did, and I sent that around to different places, and then Eric Larson liked it, and then he, you know, got me, you know, involved with Image Comics, and then he, like, and hooked me up with Joe Casey, who I created Godland with, and then, and there was, like, it was like a Fantastic Four miniseries that was going on that was sort of like a jam comic, where they had a bunch of different artists come in and, like, do their best imitation of Jack Kirby, so he, like, pulled me in on that. I got to do that, so that would be the thing I'd call, like, maybe my first gig, because that was kind of like, when people talk about a comics gig, it's usually like, yeah, you get hired by, you know, Marvel or DC to, like, draw their, you know, whatever, you know, like, you're just a cog in a machine. That's what I think of when I think of, like, a gig, or, you know, like, a first gig.
That's true. It can be that. I'm with you on that one. But I also think, like, a gig for me could be really anything, right? But that's true.
Yeah, sure.
Like, a gig can be, when you hear that nowadays, it is this a Marvel or DC thing. But a gig can be, like, say, someone wants to write, like, McFarlane calls. Can you do a Spawn?
Right.
Which I'd try, sure. Because it'd be like, holy shit. But that would be that's why I think it's a gig sort of thing, too. But I feel you on that one.
Totally,
not wrong. You're not wrong. Like, the gig now is a Marvel or DC thing, which isn't bad, don't get me wrong, it'd be amazing to work for either one, but I'm a big fan, of course, with my own books, of self-publishing and, you know, indie books and whatnot, too.
Sure, yeah.
I always try to bring on indie people, because, like yourself, too, is I think there needs to be more recognition in the world for indie folks, like, because I don't think there's enough, and I'm going to record now and saying this, I don't think there's enough, and I think there should be more about it. Like, yeah, we know Spawn, we know Savage Dragon, you know, the world knows a little bit about Savage Dragon, and, you know, we know all these other ones too going on. Paper Girls made it, and there's indie books out there that are so good that people are like, oh yeah, or Umbrella Academy. If they don't get a TV show or movie, no one knows shit about them. They don't ever get the light of day anymore, which I think is a crime. You know? But, like, what's your stance on that? Do you kind of feel the same way with that, or no?
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of, like, the idea of, you know, of a sort of Marvel and DC-centric idea of what comics is like an old idea. You know, it's outdated, outmoded. I mean, there's just so many, you have so many other options. There's like a proliferation of companies like within the direct market. And then there's that whole other world beyond the direct market of, you know, sort of like, publishers that, you know, like graphic novel publishers and, or traditional book publishers who have their, you know, comics wing. And then beyond that, you have, you know, crowdfunding and it's just this whole big world.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I do love the world, and I don't want to sound like a hater sort of thing. I love everything that's going on, but I think that there should be a little bit more focus. Like, there's a book series that came out, and you may have heard of it. I don't know if you ever read it. I just finished reading it. It almost brought me to tears. And it's a couple years old now, but it lasted for about 12. You got 12 volumes out of 12 back, like, collected trades. It was a book called DMZ by Vertigo. Did you ever hear of that one?
DMZ?
Yeah.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah. It was the war book in New York. It was war, basically. But, like, that one itself is such a good book. And your books, too, on humanity. Like, DMZ did such a good thing on that. And I think this is one of those things where people should go look further past it. It's sort of a PSA right now. Is people to go look past it. And, you know, go online and check other people out. Like, my stuff's all digital right now. And such like that, too. But go online, check out your work as well, but check out books past the Marvel DC. Look past that Iron Man. Look past that Superman. You know, just look past it. Get those books too if you love them, don't get me wrong. But look past them because you might be surprised at what you'll find, you know? Hey folks, Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is an amazing fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before. And it's a really fun place to pick up the books. So Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona. Get yourself a box, you know. Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. His work, all the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point, at least for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. You know, and you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, you know. Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show. But Thomas, I gotta say, man, that's enough of that rant. Yeah, it was nuts. I don't know. It's this PSA thing because I think this is a thing that needs to be put out there. And yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the nature of, like, small books is that, yeah, they're you know, they're small, you know, if they were getting a lot of attention, then they wouldn't, you know.
It's true.
Then they'd be big books.
It's true. Now, kind of going in back to you, man, on things, is as a kid, like, when you got that first job as doing Fantastic Four and doing that Jack Kirby-esque artwork, how was that for you? Was that kind of weird? Was that kind of not?
Well, I mean, it was super exciting.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of, you know, like a career in the arts, it's hard to, like, sort of quantify progress. Mm-hmm. And, like, getting a job working for, like, if you're in comics and you get a job working for Marvel Comics, that feels like progress. That feels like, oh, that's a big deal, you know?
Yeah.
And it felt like, oh, this is like how you get started in comics, and then sort of once that happens, you know, sort of like, you know, doors open up and you get asked to do other things. But then it was kind of like, it didn't lead to other things. Like, it just kind of happened. Yeah. And then you know, it was just, you just kind of, you know, scramble looking for whatever the next thing's going to be. Mm. You know, so, it was like a little bit eye-opening, because it was like, because that was what I'd always heard about comics up to that point. You know, because you get like the wisdom that worked, you know, for the previous generation.
Yeah.
Like, so here's how comics worked, you know, 10 years ago. Or here's how comics worked, you know, when you're like reading the stories of how this person or that person broke into comics. Mm. And it doesn't apply to today, you know? So it was like that. And so the wisdom I'd always heard, like I'd heard from, you know, people I knew who were in comics or like read when I'd like read interviews with people, it would be like, yeah, like you get your thing at like Marvel or DC, and then it leads to the next thing, and it leads to the, and before you know it, you know, 10 years have passed or 20 years have passed or whatever. And like, you know, like you're in comics. And so I thought like, okay, yeah, this is it. But I just didn't have like that book was kind of like an anomaly. And so then it was maybe like, you know, it might've been like, you know, 8 years or something until my next Marvel job, you know, like it was something like, you know, and in the meantime, I was, you know, doing stuff with Image, doing self-published stuff, you know, so, but it's like, you know, it wasn't that straight line that I've, you know, that you'd see if you like, you know, read about, you know, I don't know, Frank Miller, or, you know, just to name somebody, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah. It wasn't that one door was open and it was like these billions of things now, it's,
right, yeah, we're like, oh, you know, you gotta draw X-Men. If you draw X-Men, then, you know, then you're set.
Then you're doing Avengers next, and it's like, no, you're not.
Right.
Like, it is true. It is such a different world, especially working, like, for the big two or something, which I have no experience in. I don't know as of yet. As a writer, still doing my own published work here for a company, but it's one of those where the market's so weird. And especially if, like, Avengers books, well, they're not going to want to get the Kurt guy who just broke into the business. A guy or gal, because they're like, oh, well, Avengers have movies, and they says Avengers. We're putting some people who've been on here for years now, like 10 years in the business. It's like the experience factor goes into it a lot. I'm with you on that. It is not the same world of trying to break into comics as it once was, because I think there's a little bit more people into it, to say the least now, with all the like abilities we have to do such a thing. You know, like the Kickstarter you mentioned and whatnot, too. So, one that surprises me, though, but I'm glad it was here. I thought you were going to say you did eight years before you got another comic job. I was like, oh, God.
Oh, no, yeah. No, I mean, I was busy, you know, but I made sure to, I was kind of like a self-starter with stuff. So, if I didn't have, you know, something lined up with, like, a publisher or something, then I would, you know, do my own self-published things. Mm. But the thing with Image, Godland, that became, I think I worked on that, maybe like 8 or 9 years. Like that became like my main thing for a really long time.
That's such a good book, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Very good book. And that's cool though. Like 8 or 9 years on one series.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like it was just one of those things that just kind of added up. Like I haven't done anything as long, like, before or since, you know, it's just kind of crazy to think of that. But again, that was, it was like, even that was like a different era. Like comics were different then. You know, like now we have a lot more of these sort of like, you know, series of mini series, you know, like sort of like these short, you know, that's like a more common thing. Like even like this Fantastic Four Grand Design that I'm doing, it's a 2-issue miniseries, you know, like it's
nuts, by the way,
you know. Yeah, that it's like very different, you know, and that's kind of like the current wisdom now is like you kind of like
you have shorts.
You know, like you nobody's have, gonna yeah. read it's short attention span, like nobody's gonna read issue, you know, 13 of anything, you know, or issue 27, you know. It's like, you know, it's just, you know,
it's true. It's that younger market where they are on that. They're like, I'm not gonna read 15 volumes of this book or like two trade paperbacks because I'm gonna get bored and go on my phone. Like,
yeah, or even like, you know, it's like, oh, I heard this book's cool, but it's on issue, you know, 12, and I don't want to get issues 1 through 11, you know,
I guess that shows if you're thinking that, don't read the series, because, you know, like, that's just, if you, that's just one of those things, if you show, oh, I don't want to take the time or effort to read the other books, well, then don't read the series, then choose another series, you know, that's, ah, I hate people younger in my age, and I'm only 22, it's like, millennials are terrible, but it's true, it's, there is, that's only two, that surprises me, though, like, it truly blows me away that they do that, but you're right, and, you know, we could have a series that's on issue 13, and they could just get canceled right in the middle of a storyline, which is, happens a lot these days, too, because people, oh, they gave up on it, what? Why?
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, like, having worked on something as long as Godland, mm-hmm. I kind of, after that, I kind of thought, you know what, I think what I'd rather do is, like, figure out the story I want to tell, mm-hmm. and then tell it, you know, in as, you know, few, you know, tell it as economically as I can, you know, like, and then tell the next story, you know.
Spread it out, sort of thing, right?
Yeah, it just kind of, you know, like, that was just what comics were back then, so I didn't even question it. You know, comics back then were just like, you just keep going, you just keep, you know, one issue after another, you know, keep it going. Yeah. But, you know, just having some time to think about it, it is like, you know, like, I try to think in terms of, you know, like, a discrete story. So, like, everything after that was, like, you know, American Barbarian was, like, one story, and Transformers versus G.I. Joe was, you know, like, one, you know, complete story, and GoBots, and, you know, and Fantastic Four, you know, just kind of get in and get out.
Oh, yeah, it's one of those, but you're still working, though. That's what's amazing. It's like, you're still able to work, and that's a good thing to hear, is you're still getting the stuff, you're still creating, you're still doing what you love, you know, and that's what really truly matters. Like, even if you're doing those couple of issues, like, it's still something. You're still creating. And maybe it's not your own baby, but it's still something. You still get to use and create expand a world, hell, even. Like, Transformers vs. G.I. Joe, which I want to talk about in a minute, was truly great. And as a fan of both, I thought it was incredibly well done. But were you a fan of Transformers? Because you did Transformers and GoBots. Like, or is it one of those you just kind of, like, took the job sort of thing for GoBots? Because nobody really knows who GoBots are unless you're a Transformers fan.
Yeah, I mean, I brought GoBots to them. Like they really? Weren't, you know, like, Hasbro wasn't looking for anybody to do a GoBots comic or anything, and IDW wasn't looking for anybody to do a GoBots thing. I said to them, like, hey, I've been thinking about GoBots lately. I got some GoBots ideas, you know, like I know there's other things I should be putting my energy towards and thinking of, but I like, this GoBots thing is, like, keeps, like, itching, you know, and like, I think I got a GoBots in me, you know, like, what do you think, you know, so I definitely brought them GoBots, like, like, I'm not somebody who, like, you know, has, you know, fantasized about, like, GoBots, you know, what my, like, GoBots story ideas or whatever, like, you know, through my whole life or anything, but it was just, like, I just, like, kind of felt like there was something there. Like, I they are nostalgic for me. Like, you know, like, before Transformers, there was GoBots. And I remember, you know, the first time seeing a GoBot and thinking it was the coolest thing. It's this, you know, robot, and then it turns into a car. And, like, I, you know.
It's childhood.
It was just amazing. Yeah, exactly. And so I was kind of trying to tap into, like, the, like, those feelings and like, sort of the mystery of them. And like, when you have these toy lines, you know, now, like, the launches of these things are so well coordinated, but I just, like, there was, like, a time where there'd be a toy, and you'd have to kind of figure out what this toy is, and then maybe a year later or something, then the cartoon comes, like, He-Man, you know, it was, you know, there was, like, a lag time between the toy, and so you're, and like, it has, like, an air of mystery, and you're, like, looking at, like, the little, like, symbols and markings on these figures and trying to, you know, figure, oh, what's this, you know, and so I was thinking of that with GoBots. Like, there was, like, a span of time between when the GoBots toys came out and the cartoon came out, and all, in all of these cases, it was a disappointment. Like,
yeah,
the He-Man cartoon, I know it's, like, this beloved cartoon. To me, I was, like, so disappointed in the He-Man cartoon, because I thought, like, I thought the toy and the mini comics were, like, so badass and stuff, and then the cartoon came out, and it just seemed, like, pablum. It just seemed like kids' stuff. And same with GoBots. Like, It was this like really cool toy. Like, you know, you had all these like ideas of what it is, and then the cartoon is just like, it just seemed like it was, you know, for little kids or something.
Did the Transformers disappoint though?
No, Transformers didn't. Transformers delivered. Like, you know, Transformers and G.I. Joe were like a cut above.
Oh god,
you know,
like, yeah.
You know, like they're very quaint to watch now.
Transformers and G.I. Joe, yeah, they were those ones where you really felt, I don't know, like there was just something about them. I mean, obviously, GoBots and like it didn't deliver because who talks about the GoBots cartoon anymore?
And yeah, I mean, I have learned, like having worked on GoBots, yeah. I have learned that there is a subset of fandom who are like way into the GoBots, but yeah, it's a small number of people. Very, you know, where Transformers and G.I. Joe fan, like Transformers in particular, but even G.I. Joe fandom too, like it's like a pretty big thing. And just historically, like Transformers and G.I. Joe, like the comics of the 80s, they were like two of the top selling comics of the 80s, so it definitely, like for like a comics readership, it definitely like left its mark.
Yeah.
And is remembered.
Oh, got you.
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan of that stuff. I wasn't like a super fan. I wasn't super steeped in it. I kind of like outgrew it at a certain point. I don't know if outgrowing is the right term, but I definitely didn't follow it. And then I sort of like I kept hearing about how great the G.I. Joe comic is, like the old like Larry Hama comic was from Marvel. So like, every now and then I'd kind of like check out an issue here and there, and you know, I thought it was, you know, kind of cool. But like I still like I loved it when I was a kid. I had, you know, a lot of nostalgia for it, a lot of ideas of like, you know, like I just had like really strong ideas about like what works and what doesn't work and what I want to see from it, what I didn't see, and so like I was able to bring that to it. Like it really felt like it was like the perfect thing for me. Like if you just like boil those concepts down to their basics, it's like, you know, giant alien robots that you know, can change the shape, giant shape-shifting alien robots,
yeah.
And then these sort of like superhero army guys, you know, like Nick Fury and his Howling Commandos, you know, with like a sci-fi bend to it. You know, fit, yeah, just like really fit with like, you know, the kind of stuff I was doing, and I felt like I could, you know, do something really cool. I felt like it was kind of like this perfect thing kind of fell in my lap. Like John Barber, who I co-wrote it with, he was the one who sort of, you know, asked me like, hey, would you like to do a, you know, Transformers and G.I. Joe crossover? And I was like, oh man, that's like so perfect. Like I never would have even imagined something like that for me, because I would have thought like, how would you even
make it,
you know,
a storyline?
Yeah. Well, no, like how would you even get that job? Like who's looking for you know, somebody to do that, you know? You know, how often do those things come out? They don't, you know, they don't, that's one of those things doesn't, I mean, now, like, they cross over all the time, but, you know, it was one of those things where it was, like, the last one was, like, 10 years prior, you know?
Yeah, it's a childhood thing. Yeah. Like, that definitely is your childhood fandom, and you're able to work on it. Like, that is one of those rare occasions you get that. They're like, hey, you want to work in your childhood? Oh, yeah, which piece of it? Here's the half your cake of childhood. Okay, then, yeah, yes, where do I sign?
It brought me right back to, like, when I first, you know, started watching. Like, I thought, like, man, like, to tell that, you know, that little kid that, like, oh, you know, when you grow up, you're going to be actually, like, doing the comic book of it, and you're going to put them together, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, I remember when I was a kid, I would, like, make up little characters and stuff, and I had a character who was from the planet Megatron.
Whoa.
And then Transformers came out. And then they kept talking about Megatron, and I'm like, oh, wow, that, you know, like, I was like, that's like that thing I can't, you know.
They stole my idea.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I thought that, but it was definitely like I felt like a connection between, like me and the things I create, and then this, like, you know, world of, like, legitimate, you know, like, entertainment.
Yeah, because it's a world that works, you know? It's one of those things you're like, gee, that could never work. When you sit down and think about it, you're like, oh shit, that works. Like, you could really do that. Now, I gotta ask, man, Thomas. Top three favorite themes. Your favorite G.I. Joe character, your favorite Transformer, and your favorite GoBot.
Yeah, I mean, like, the GoBot one's easy. It's Turbo.
Really?
Turbo's, like, just, like, the coolest. Yeah, and, mean, that was, and that was the first one I saw. He's like this red, you know, he's, I mean, red is just like such a great color for like a character. You know, you think like Daredevil or whatever, you know, these, you know, it's just this very powerful color.
Stands out,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, stands out. But like, yeah, he's like, he turns into this super cool looking sports car.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like this cool goggles and mask and stuff. So like, and that was kind of like one of the earliest things I was thinking of going into it. Into like doing GoBots was that like, okay, like there's leader one, he's the leader, there's all these characters, but like Turbo is gonna be like, he's gonna be like, you know, the guy, like he's gonna be the main, like I'm not gonna, you know, say or position him as like he's the main guy, but he's gonna be the main guy. He's like, he's like the one who you're gonna want to follow him, you know.
Yeah,
you're gonna want to follow his adventures. I mean, like for Transformers, it's, you know, it's like an obvious thing, but it's like Optimus Prime, like he, like he's the guy, like
fair,
he's
enough.
You know, he's like red, white and blue, and he's and he's always right, he's you know, he's like you know, he, and he's kind, you know.
What about
he's,
Ratchet, man, like Ratchet or
heart.
Even Cliffjumper?
Yeah, no, these, you know, Cliffjumper was probably like, there's like the characters you identify with,
yeah,
and then there's the characters you aspire towards. So like Cliffjumper would be like a, like an identify with character, like especially for a kid, like especially those like little Transformers, a kid's gonna identify with more. But like, you know, you want to be Optimus Prime when you grow up.
It's true, yeah. And then it's like, and he's so amazing. Yeah. It's like, this is, and you find out, oh, it's kind of your dad. Oh shit.
Yeah, he's like you know, he's like Superman, or you know, he's like, you know, he's just this.
He's
you
your
know,
pocket.
He's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your favorite G.I. Joe, do you think? It's important questions, because I think it's a super fan. Like, I can see where you went with your work, too, by the way, but it's one of those, like, what do you think your favorite G.I. Joe guy would be?
Yeah,
Cobra,
I mean, like,
or G.I. Joe?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, Snake Eyes is the easy, like, Snake Eyes,
oh, yeah.
he's the star of G.I. Joe.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he's, you know, and if you know, if that comic had a main character, it would be Snake Eyes. Like, he's just the coolest, like, you know. But, like, as I was working on it, there were characters that I discovered that I didn't know about as a kid,
yeah,
because they were sort of exclusive to the comics.
Oh.
Like, I knew the TV cartoon, but I didn't really know the I didn't read a single G.I. Joe comic when I was a kid. So, like, when I was reading it, like, to research to do the comic, I really fell in love with Dr. Venom.
Me?
Who was like this Cobra. He was like this villain, but he was like one of these characters who's like, he's evil and he loves it.
Yeah.
You know, and like, he had all the best lines in the comic. He would say these things that were like funny and dark and profound. And he had a little bit of like a, like fourth wall thing to where it was almost like, it was almost like he kind of knew he was in a comic. Like he was that, you know, like he was like that kind of character. So I kind of pushed those aspects of him, so I really had a lot of fun with that character. And he's a character, he like, I think he dies in like the 18th issue of G.I. Joe or something, like he dies pretty early, and he so he's, you know, he gets kind of forgotten, but like if you're like reading those like early issues of G.I. Joe, he is like, he's like a major character. He's just awesome, and so, like, I really embraced him, and so he became, like, a big part of mine. And then the other one who's kind of, like, the other side of the coin to him was General Flag, who was, like, I knew General Flag, like, the name General Flag, because they had the toy, the USS Flag, that was, like, the giant G.I. Joe.
That aircraft carrier. Right?
Aircraft carrier,
yeah.
And it was the USS Flag. And so then it's, like, I'm reading it, and it's, like, oh, there's a General Flag. This is the guy who that's named after. And then he dies, you know, pretty early. He dies in, like, maybe the 13th issue or something.
The hell?
Yeah, and then you know, so then they dedicate this like, aircraft carrier to him. So, like, another character I never heard of. And, like, I thought he was pretty cool, too. But he was kind of, you know, he was, like, whatever. He had, like, a real cool visual. He had, like, you know, this general's outfit and sunglasses and stuff. Like, and, like, I kind of played up, you know, like, I kind of made him into this, like, kind of, like, you know, this, like, badass and, like... And again, like another, he wasn't like this in the comic, but I made him sort of like a fourth wall kind of character,
mm-hmm.
who's like, you know, and I kind of made it like sort of mysterious of like, you know, you're trying to figure out like what's his deal? Like, is he, mm-hmm. you know, like he seems like he's like a total, you know, like he's, you know, total good guy or whatever, but you know, it seems like maybe there might be something dark going on under the surface. You know, so I, you know, so that those are like the, those are the two, like Snake Eyes is like the easy answer and probably the true answer or the correct answer. But then there were these two that like I really like fell in love with, you know, and sort of discovered and fell in love with and made a lot out of.
Yeah, you added so much more to them. That's the cool part. It's like you took these characters and were like, oh, they're dead. Like, but you're like, wait, hold on. There's more to them. They're getting one final breath underneath my watch. Damn it. That's cool. It's cool you're able to do that.
I feel like I kind of, like, made them into stars a little bit. Like you know, kind of like Moneyball or something. Like, I found these, like, underutilized players and then, you know, brought them up to, like, the big leagues or whatever. And, like, I don't know if this is true or whatever, but, like, I wondered if maybe I kind of, like, because these were, like, characters that, like, Larry Hama created. And I wondered if, oh, maybe, like, did I maybe, like, remind him of, like, these, how great these characters were? Because, you know, after Transformers versus G.I. Joe, you know, he brought, like, Dr. Venom, like, came back into, like, the G.I. Joe comics of, like, right now. He kind of made a comeback. So, I don't know if it's the case, you know, but I thought maybe it might have, like, you know, he might have jogged Larry Hama's memory a little bit, being like, "Oh yeah, that was a pretty cool character that I created," and yeah, it would be kind of there is a, like some more meat on those bones and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it must be. I'm gonna say that's true because how many characters did he create for the Joes? Like seriously. You're gonna forget some. Like everyone forgets the Navy guy, and I'm even forgetting his name. But I loved him. He was a cool, smart ass. But oh god, I'm drawing a blank on his name. But here's the key.
You mean Shipwreck?
Yes. I don't know why Shipwreck was always cool to me.
Yeah, people really embrace Shipwreck, like especially on the cartoon, because he looks like Jack Nicholson. Like Jack Nicholson. Like true. For me, he looks like Jack Nicholson from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh my god.
And they kind of play him up a little bit in that way in the cartoon, and I had plans to kind of play him up that way a little bit, but then I went in a different direction. But there was also like a movie prior to Cuckoo's Nest, which I've never seen the movie, but I've seen like stills from it, and it he's like straight up Shipwreck. It's
really?
Jack Nicholson, and he's like total like he's you know got his like little like you know like that bag you know that you wear when you're going to sea.
Yeah,
you know, that
big,
you know like and like it's the total Shipwreck visual.
Oh fuck, that's cool. I never, that's something I've never known, and that is amazing. And I hope fans listening to the show fucking take that in the heart. It's like all of a sudden there's like Nicholson comes out there, he's like, so I heard down the grapevine not really up in G.I.
Yeah,
Joe.
I mean, you know, I loved, like, even before I worked on G.I. Joe, like I loved those semi-recent G.I. Joe movies. Like I like the first one a lot, and then the second one, like, I really liked. And you know, it's just like that series, like just never really caught on. I wish it would have. Like, and yeah, I'd love to see Jack Nicholson in the role of Shipwreck.
Oh my god, that'd be amazing. I'd cry. I'd be like, this is yes, it's come full circle. Thank you, Thomas.
Who brought it together? Like, are you up to date with any of the any of the G.I. Joe comics? Like, you read any of the current G.I. Joe comics?
I have cried because I'm a huge fan of G.I. Joe and Transformers. Transformers is a little bit more than the Joes, but I love both of them. I try so hard to catch up. I catch up on the news because I follow fan pages and whatnot, so I catch up on the news. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit caught up. You couldn't spoil, though, for me. It's fine. Like, why? What do you think?
It's just, because I'm up to date. Like, I've read all the Larry Hama stuff from, you know, the first issue of G.I. Joe all the way up to, like, you know, whatever came out last month.
Jesus.
And it's such a great, it's like this great, one of the great, like, epics of sort of, you know, comic book, of, like, a super, like, I consider G.I. Joe, like, superheroes, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, I think it's got way more in common with, like, the X-Men or something than it does with, you know, like, Sergeant Rock or something.
Oh,
like,
fuck it. Look at Cobra Commander.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Cobra itself.
Yeah, you know, and you can go into, like, the origins of it, of, like, you know, Larry Hama had, like, a pitch for, like, it was going to be, like, the son of Nick Fury and stuff. You know, he had this whole team, and then it kind of, morphed those ideas, he brought those ideas to, like, to G.I. Joe when that, you know, came across his desk, you know, but.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, like, it's just great. It's just a great comic, and it's like really, like, to this day, like, the story, you know, it's still continuing, and I just love the way it just kind of, you know, like, yeah, like characters kind of, go away for a while, and then they sort of come back in the mix, and people, you know, come in and out of it, and it's just got this real organic feel, and it's like one of the few comics that are cut from that, like, old-fashioned mold where it's like, you know, like, one writer or you know, one writer-artist or, you know, where it's like the same guy who's been, like, telling this ongoing story and you know, month in, month out. Like, it had its breaks, there was, like, a, you know, break between, like, the 90s and, like, the early 2000s. But other than that, it's been, like, pretty much continuous. Like,
I'm going to have to buy these books now. I'm going to have to go to, like, these, like, people who sell, like Zia Records around here and pick up these books. Because I know a little bit what happens, but, fuck, yeah. You really sold me on this. You really sold me.
It goes in, like, unpredictable directions. And then sometimes, you know, it'll start to be kind of like, I'm not really feeling it anymore. And then something will happen where you're like, oh, no, yeah, this is great. I'm so glad I stuck it out because it was so worth it, you know.
Cool. Oh, God. Okay. So, damn it. So it's Transformers and G.I. Joe's I got to read now.
Yeah, right.
Crap. God damn it.
Yeah, I'm not up to date on Transformers, but they have this, like, Transformers 84 miniseries that looks super interesting to me. Yeah, it's like drawn in the style of, the first issues of the Transformers comic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it takes place in that era. Like, it looks super cool. I just haven't had a chance to track it down yet.
There was a good one I'd recommend for you because I think you might like it. And the folks at home, make sure you guys check this one out too. I don't remember. I think it's Age of Steel or something like that from Transformers. It's where if they landed in the U.S., but in the early or sort of actually later 1800s with the railroads and stuff like that.
Okay. So like a steampunk Transformers.
Kind of, yes. Yeah. And it was like, so it's still like, there's no anything like machinery going around. There's, I think there might have been a couple cars and a couple tanks, but there was mostly it was the steam engine sort of stuff. So yeah. It kind of was steampunk and it was cowboys and a little bit there too and whatnot. It was like Red Dead Redemption meets Transformers.
Right, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean,
Like, Starscream was a biplane. He was like, he kind of looked like the Red Baron. It was really cool. I think you might like that one. So, but folks at home, you know what's going to probably happen after this show, Thomas? I'm taking a wild guess here. There's going to be somebody who's going to draw us as our G.I. Joe characters.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. There's been fan art coming out recently from episodes. So, do artists at home listening to this episode, if you draw us, we'll give you personal, at least I will, give a personal shout out if you draw Thomas or I as G.I. Joe characters that we love. You don't make me look like Nicholson. I want to look like my 22-age self right now. I don't want to look old. Oh, God. That'd be amazing. Well, Thomas, man, we're coming into the show here, man. I definitely got to say thank you, one, for the recommendations, because I'm going to go buy the hell out of G.I. Joe books. But thank you for coming on the show, Thomas, and giving your, like, kind of input on stuff and everything you shared today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, man. Is there anything of your personal books? I know we didn't get a chance to touch upon them too much, but anything coming out currently that you want to promote
a little bit? Fantastic Four Grand Design just came out last week. Yeah. It's, it's for Marvel or whatever, but it's like, it's me all the way. Like, it's exact. Like, I write, draw, color it, letter it, and it's like exactly the story I wanted to tell. I told it my way. It doesn't look like any other comic on the stands. I'm super proud of it. I want you to check it out. And then issue two comes out, at the end of this month. It comes out, issue one came out the day before Halloween. Issue two comes out the day before Thanksgiving. That's easy enough to remember.
Yeah. I dig that, man. Anything else you got coming, or is that kind of really?
That's the thing. I got this thing that's like hasn't been announced yet that I'd like love to hype up, but like they kind of want to save it for like a big announcement and stuff. But you'll know it when you see it.
Fair enough. We won't say on recording. Let's just leave it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool, man. It's cool. Now, where can people follow you at on social media?
I'm at Tom Scioli. TOMSCIOLI on Twitter, and then on Instagram I'm at @Tom_Scioli, like Tom_Scioli. So those are the two places.
Cool. And folks at home, you can follow me at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter and at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. Make sure you guys follow Thomas and whatnot too. And Thomas, thank you, man, for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
No, I'll tell you after the show. But okay. It was like, wait a minute here. No way I can't say that on the air. Shit. Almost got in trouble there. Definitely, man, thanks for coming on. And folks at home, make sure you check out his work. Check out Fantastic Four. It's going to be really, really, really worth it, I think. Yeah, man, thanks for coming on. And the folks at home, stay classy, comic book fans.